Hello and welcome to Holden Village. In the fireside room this afternoon, Edna Hansen will be continuing her series, Our Internal Tree of Life, Our Brain. And this session will be a time for mentoring, growing up. This is tape number 99-4. Now let's go to the fireside room for Edna's presentation.
And thank you all for coming. I have a friend here who will help me.
Everybody have a copy?
No.
Not yet.
They're coming.
It's just for one little piece of information I'd like to know. How's the pens working out?
We'll share.
Actually, you can write it right now, and then Ione will collect them. I can go on, and then she can collect them. I'd like you to try to remember, if you... It's going to be a little hard, but... teenage years, if you can think of one person that really helped you, that was kind of a mentor, not time-wise, I mean, it didn't have to be for long, but someone that you really can think of in terms of giving you something that would carry you on in a very positive way. Hopefully you can remember. The age span I'm thinking about is when you get into the years when things get a little bit difficult, from like 13, 14, now it's starting a little earlier, but say that through the teens. If you can think of one person, please just don't put the name down, but what the person was, what if you knew his profession, or if you knew what he did or she did, doesn't have to be a man or a woman, it can be either man or woman. And then Ione will collect those, and I'll tell you why we'll do that. I don't have a poem this evening, but I found something very special. This wonderful library. I could spend a week just in the library here. I hope you've all found the library. Possibly I'm the one that's the newcomer. I want to read this because it's very... very fitting for our time right now with our teenagers.
Excuse me, did you roll it deep?
I told the gentleman that we were ready. I think he did. This book is called Peace Tales. They're world folk tales. They're pretty amazing. We are definitely going to talk about the brain, too. This one is from Indonesia. It's called Not Our Problem. Oh, the light is great. I couldn't quite see the other night. The king sat with his advisor eating honey on puffed rice. As they ate, they leaned from the palace window and watched the street below. They talked of this and that. The king, not paying attention to what he was doing, let a drop of honey fall onto the windowsill. "Oh, sire, let me wipe that up," offered the advisor. "Never mind," said the king. "It's not our problem. The servants will clean it later." As the two continued to dine on their honey and puffed rice, the drop of honey slowly began to drip down the windowsill. At last it fell with a plop onto the street below. Soon a fly had landed on the drop of honey and began his own meal. Immediately, a gecko sprang from under the palace and with a flip of its long tongue swallowed the fly. But a cat had seen the gecko. Gecko?
Gecko.
And pounced. Then a dog sprang forward and attacked at the cat. "Sire, there seems to be a cat and dog fight in the street. Should we call someone to stop it?" "Never mind," said the king. "It's not our problem." So the two continued to munch their honey and puffed rice. Meanwhile, the cat's owner had arrived and was beating the dog. The dog's owner ran up and began to beat the cat. Soon the two were beating each other. "Sire, there are two persons fighting in the street now. Shouldn't we send someone to break this up?" The king looked from the window. Never mind, it's not our problem. The friends of the cat's owners gathered and began to cheer him on, and the friends of the dog's owner began to cheer her on as well. Soon both groups entered the fight and attacked at each other. Sire, a number of people are fighting in the street now. Perhaps we should call someone to break this up. The king was too lazy even to look. You can guess what he said. Never mind, it's not our problem. New soldiers arrived on the scene. At first, they tried to break up the fighting, but when they heard the cause of the fight, some sided with the cat's owner, others sided with the dog's owner. Soon, the soldiers, too, had joined the fight. With the soldiers involved, the fight erupted into civil war, and houses were burned down, and people were harmed, and the palace itself was set afire and burned to the ground. The king and his advisors, surveying the ruins, perhaps, said the king, I was wrong. Perhaps the drop of honey was our problem. This is a tale from Thailand. I read that because tonight we're going to talk about how our brain now has become almost full grown. These are teenage years that I want to talk about. And though the brain has many, many dendrites and is trying to decide how many it will eliminate in order to have more growth by way of experiences, there are certain portions in the limbic system that are not fully developed until a person is about 18, 19, or 20 years old. Sometimes it takes a little longer. The part that doesn't really fully mature is the part for cognitive problem solving. And we think about teenagers and the tasks they are put to in deciding their life skills and how to stay in God's good graces and trying to handle their life under varying circumstances as exists now in our society. And these dendrites are still trying to come together. So this is a vital time in terms of recognition of where our brain is, to think in terms of how we are with our young people. This, to me, identifies the situation with the problems we have now with teens, because I think it began long ago, and of course I always like to go back to beginnings, because that's where we started our brain work here, was with the neonatal brain becoming humankind and then being born and still not actually all together until 10 years old, when it really has a very hard cranial top. I think that if we look at the problems we have with the state of our teens and some of the unbelievable incidents we have had just recently with the shootings and so forth, I think that if we want to solve the problem, we have to go back to that first drop of honey, which is where it begins, with the mother and the child bonding together and there being a family. And since this is a wonderful theme, is the tree of life, I like to think of what God proposed, that there would be a family tree where the roots would be the grandparents and the great-grandparents and the great-great-grandparents, having a strong foundation there coming up through this terrific growth pattern and then going out with the limbs. I tried to do this hurriedly tonight with my half a dozen grown children and our 12 grandchildren and our 5 great-grandchildren, and we're expecting one more, and it kind of got out of hand, so I couldn't finish it. But it's wonderful if you can do this at home. Maybe grandparents, I did this for 2 of our grandchildren for Christmas presents, and I think it's a wonderful thing to give your grandchildren, because they don't always know about who came first, you know, way back as far as you can remember. If that wonderful family tree of life is strong, there is very seldom a time when you will find that a child will have difficulty in following a pathway that will take him where he's supposed to go. for many reasons, our society has caused family disruption. And I was in a panel one time. We tried to figure out where it all began. And a great, great many thought that it was because of the Second World War, when the need was so great for women to go into many jobs, making planes, etc., that the family started to disintegrate at that time. And then because many other things started then, one of those new kinds of processes were the daycare centers. And so they have proliferated and become something kind of a national, something that belongs here, like baseball and everything else. We have, every town has a multiple supply of daycare centers. The media has also told us in many ways that we can do everything. You know, we can go to work and we can be family and we can, like the media was the message in this wonderful group we had last night talking about technology. Everything gets ahead of us. Our brain wants to take it together, wants to decide what to do with a particular problem. But when we come into a situation where there are many, many things to be decided and choices to make, then we have problems with these dendrites, believe me. I think I didn't bring my brain one night, and everybody wanted to see the brain, and I made this because I knew that the brain was very beautiful, even though the way it's described, and this is what a great many people feel, this is also from the library. I've had a lot of wonderful time with the library here. This is the description that most people think about when they hear about our brain. Few of us have seen one, and it's not an attractive or impressive sight. It's about 4 inches wide, 5 inches long, and 3 inches high, and is shaped like the meat from an oversized walnut. And yet it's the most complex and fascinating organism known to exist in the universe. Its products include the pyramids of Giza, the alphabet, television, the Mona Lisa, the United States Constitution, French cuisine, baseball, the Moonlight Sonata, and the New York Stock Exchange. We call this marvel a brain. I could have thought of a lot more beautiful things. We each have a brain. It's our most valuable valuable possession, but we tend to take it for granted. And that's really true. We do take it for granted. And I don't agree with that description. I have been fortunate enough to see a brain when I was in brain research with Dr. Hahn. And I know that it's a bit of matter without the life force and the energies, but when you see its complexity and the multiple folds of the cortex, which now they really believe that this part, which is underneath your skull, I had a bottle to sit it on. It was very difficult. And her wonderful, Susan, came here and held it. I didn't bring the bottle. I was afraid that it would, you know, break. There are so many new theories about brain development. It comes so fast. This is your brain stem that goes down to the back here, where you can feel a little very hard bony structure, which is the top of the first part of the brain. To go back, I guess I did this with the first class, the neonatal image is like this, and then God starts to develop us into the humankind. The little head is actually down here on the chest, and you don't even see it when you see the first form. Have you seen it? Some mothers that have, yes. And then it begins to grow, and it's so fantastic because it begins to become humankind within 4 months. It has the distinguishing features of a human. And this is it, this is the beginning. And then this is the cerebellum, which is there in the neonate, but doesn't become full-formed until about 6 months. And then along comes, where's my limbic system? In my lap. This is these are both the thalamuses, and they have lots to do with our innermost thoughts and ideas. And the amygdala, on all of these now, see the hippocampus, these little things, it's not necessary really to know their names. In fact, I've been told that I don't really, I've used my own dialogue with them. Some of the amygdalas here that are supposed to look like acorns, you'll find that they probably pronounce it different. And the hippocampus here is supposed to look like seahorses. And these all fit around here. If you can hold that brainstem. The Velcro's really wearing out on this trip. And then the gray matter has the left and right hemispheres, which is the beginning of our very special talents as human beings. And the corpus callosum is this piece here that has millions of brain cells that will allow for the transference of information from the left side to the right side. And we've had a lot of discussion about I'm left-brained or you're right-brained, and we are really both-brained. And the ability to have this very, very active and be able to transfer gives us a total energy system that can really evolve and develop a lot of things that we need to do. So that goes on. Thank you very much. The cortex, this is the ultimate God-given gift to us. We have more coiled cortex, even more than the dolphins and everything else, and they're wonderful and they're beautiful, but they don't have all of the convolutions and the many, many folds that we have. They really feel that this is because we can still grow our brains to greater dimensions. The skull that fits over this does have space. I mean, I have seen a cranium opened for brain surgery, and it is not that tight. There is it's because blood circulation must go around this. So these evolutions can widen and broaden. You can grow your brain to 125, and I don't know, we'll just go on. It depends on how you exercise this. Somebody called it a muscle. It's multiple kinds of things besides a muscle. So there we are, thank you. And that's the brain. I made it out of evening gown materials because I like to go when I'm invited to schools to show children what a beautiful brain they have. And tonight I brought some letters because they're so wonderful. I have to read you one or two. They are unbelievable. They like to know, they don't know that this is what they have up here. And my contention is that if we allowed our children from earliest on to recognize this potential, they wouldn't be so haphazard about the care of this brain. You know, it is so phenomenal that God designed us with such intricacy that it's beyond our own comprehension that we have billions of brain cells here. And the intricate process of the brain cells doing what they do, there's the cell, the axon, the dendrites that grow down, the little ways that they connect or decide how they should go about making a synapse. And somebody here said they saw one. Did you say that? When there's one connection, they don't come together, but there is an explosion like the 4th of July. So while I'm talking, there's a lot of 4th of July firecrackers going on in there. And this is because we are an ultra, ultra, ultra high frequency being. We are God's creation on this earth like no other, and we have the potential to do what He wants us to to have this world become. That's if we have to keep everybody's brain in good order. And you exercise everything else, except eyes. I have to get to that next week. But we can exercise this too. And it's been shown now, they have done research on Alzheimer's and some other particular situations where they know that if they introduce new activities, and I don't mean just one, but like with rapid succession over a couple of weeks' time, they can see a difference in the alertness and all the other qualities that seem to diminish with this disease. And the brain is trying its best to do what it can do. Children that are, I happen to think of one little boy who was drowned in a swimming pool for over 20 minutes, and he was like a beanbag. You know, he had no eye contact, he had no muscle coordination. You just, wherever you put him, that's where he was, like a little heap. But we, the team would, one person at each arm, leg, and one for the head, and start to do him what he would have done if he were an infant that was crawling. And after several months of that, things began to happen in his brain. His brain got the message, there is something going on here. I start to get the idea, it has to go up here, that this leg moves and this arm moves and so on. And after, at the end of that year, he was crawling down the hall and making eye contact. So this is not a miracle. This is what God planned, that if we could understand what our brain is, that we can perform the miracles that he wants us to. You know, many places in the world, and particularly in countries like Indonesia and other places, if a doctor works on the patient and they perform a good surgery, they will respond by saying, thank you that you allowed Jesus to come through your hands. Or thank you that you performed his work. You know, you are his missionary. That's the way they feel about health and medicine. It's a little different from, we take a lot of things for granted. I'm thankful I have two hips. Jesus let me have two hips because I had to come to Holden and walk up those hills, which is a challenge. The reason I really wanted you to write about the person that you thought about was that at this age, hopefully along the way, if this person, this teenage girl, boy, can recognize how special they are with the brain they have, if they're fortunate enough to have a mentor. Now, modeling is what I think is the best thing in the world for young people. And of course it can start when they're very, very young. One of the best ways to become a mentor is to listen to children and listen to them from very earliest on, and the things that they will teach you and give you, it's unbelievable. The most wonderful thing I ever had said to me, and I think it has given me a special kind of focus for everything I do, and one little 4-year-old looked up and said, how come you're always in your smile? You know, I never heard that before. It meant everything that I guess she felt in the relationship, but she put it in that dialogue, which was unbelievable. The little fellow he wasn't that little, he was about 7, and I was taking him to a school program, after school program, because his mother called and said she couldn't pick him up. And I, along the way, I knew Josh, and he said, by the way, do you know where heaven is? I said, I'm not real sure, but I know it's there. And he said, don't worry. The astronauts are going up again, and they're going to find it. They're always problem solving, you know, especially at 7, 8, and 9, because there's a lot of mysteries that come at them at that time. And they children come into this world and there's no such thing as death. We help them understand about death. We don't, they think of the continuation of life, which we should allow them to feel. I said the other time I was giving the talk that my grandmother used to say that Jesus had gone ahead to prepare a place in his father's house. There were plenty of I don't know whether she said rooms or mansions, but that was all right with me because she always made it out that it was kind of fun and beautiful to be there. And I think that if you relieve children in that way when they're very, very young, and then they'll grow into our Christian faith and learn that this is exactly the way it's supposed to be. I mean, this is not a lie. This is the truth. And they can embody that in a more mature way as they get older. The mentoring, the ultimate mentor, of course, is Jesus. I know that my parents, my dad, went through the catechism with me night after night, and I know that I knew as a very young child that Jesus, I knew that he was a wonder, but he was also my best friend. And I think that I might have in very young years treated it in not quite the right way, because I can still remember getting down on my knees and saying, "Oh, I really want that blue bicycle for Christmas. Would you please make it possible?" You know, and went through lots of times when I knew that if I had a chance at all, I'd have to ask Jesus about it, and that sometimes it worked. And of course, my dad had told me that if it was the best for me, that it would be. But I always asked him first, and I think if this is what happens with teens who go into programs where what is it called? Kids for Jesus. I mean, there are many names for these organizations where after a while they have not been with a Christian group or haven't had the luck to have it in their beginnings, are into a group, and they are always wanting that kinship. And this is something that mentors can provide along the way to getting to Jesus. I mean, hopefully that the mentors that teens will find will be Christian enough to allow them to see the positive way of becoming Jesus. Jesus will be their model. I think that modeling is something that we can translate in terms of long years ago, young people in ages of 14, 15 became apprentices to many, many ways of learning to do very serviceable things like woodworking or building houses with their, first their, it used to be with their fathers, and then later on, apprenticeship programs were started in many places in this country. I wish they had lasted. One was started in Berkeley, where in the 2 years before graduation, the young person was allowed to choose a mentoring situation. And this was because the community was ready to allow them to have these opportunities. And they could choose to go into a dental office, or they could go into a caregiver's home for elderly, or they could go into a wood shop, or they could go into a potter's. Anyway, it was set up in Berkeley, and it was 2 years going, and it was so successful that they either had to completely redo the school organization of the whole senior program, and that seemed to be too much, and it ended. But I think that would be a positive way to get back to allowing young people to have a good beginning for their future. And some places are still trying to do this. But if Iona, I know you have to leave, but could you collect the cards? You know, it'll be interesting to find the diversity in the kinds of mentors that you all have Are they all the ones?
Let me see.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I think they're all here in Glade.
That's great.
Did I get them all?
Probably.
Some haven't turned theirs in yet.
So we have enough here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just, there are many things in our Bible that do refer to children. I think that, how many people would agree with me that I think Jesus wanted to say a lot more about children than was recorded. I think that I wish that I could have been around because I know that he did this. I the things he said were so striking and vital about, you know, if you want to get in heaven, then you must be as a child. And so many ways that when you think about that, that's a puzzle in itself, isn't it? But the simplicity and the total caring of a young child for someone that they honor and respect is so beautiful that I think that's the way Jesus wants us to have our feeling for our Father in heaven. But in Psalm 119:9, it says, "How can young people keep their way pure?" And it's by guarding it according to your word. And that's it. "Then with my whole heart I seek you. Do not let me stray from your commandments. I treasure your word in my heart so that I may not sin against you." These kinds of supporting rules for young people are invaluable. And I'm sure that it's done here in the village. And I wish it were done. Of course, I wish it were done in the schools. That's it. And teachers are so many times models for us. I had one that understood me. I couldn't do geometry. He said I always had something in the beginning that was supposed to be at the end, but it was all right. You know, he allowed me to get through geometry anyway. Mm-hmm. See, my heart was in it somehow. And the many workers at our church with children are real models, and we can see this day that they are fine people that give their lives for this. And the auto body mechanic owner did this modeling end in whoever wrote this into this person doing this kind of work, or did the auto body mechanic owner decide the special kind of work that the person did? You know, it isn't necessary that the model that you model the future experience or profession, but only that, you know, that they really gave you a feeling that there were great things to do in life and lots of mysteries to be found. And lots of this happened in schools, and that's for sure. And I'm going, if you don't mind, I will keep these because I really want to look at this in regards to something I'm working on with someone else about modeling. We're trying to get this kind of a program in our high school. My daughter teaches in the high school, and she works with special kids, and lots of them do not even have homes. And she has one on her sofa right now, and she's a wonderful young lady too. She just simply has two parents that really don't have time for her. So this is the way of it. This one kind of thing that was brought up so many times that people wanted to know about right brain conditions and left brain, and maybe you know all about it. The left brain has the language skills and the logical and linear thinking, and it's kind of a vertical kind of process, where the right brain, you can think about it as a horizontal kind of energy, and yet the two of them together produce what's necessary for many, many, many kinds of things, because all of these linear and logical thought patterns cannot become dimensional in picture form unless you use the right brain to go along with your linear thoughts. And then again, with the right brain, visual and spatial recognition skills, have intuitive feelings and artistic expression, but we can generate them into something viable through the left brain. I mean, you have to have the addition of both sides to bring about the fruition of whatever you want to do. And this corpus callosum has to be kept very active, and the more you try to problem solve, and they suggest crossword puzzles and taking anything you don't at the moment in your lifetime do, then let that be something you engage in. I think about that. It's a time frame thing, and we all have to deal with that. I decided to take up felting because I really like to paint, and that was an experience because I learned how to make a hat. And while you felt a hat, which is has many twofold. Does anybody felt in here? Twofold process of where you have the wool, and you put the cloth under it, and you put the wool on it, and you rub it with soap, and you agitate it, and it starts to turn into felt. And then you put a little piece of cloth inside the frame, and you put the wool over top so that eventually you're going to have a hat. And then you keep scrubbing, and then you take and you start to fit it on your head, and it's wet. And by the time you shape that hat, you are dripping wet. It's a fun class with the group, and you all look ridiculous, but you get a hat out of that. And that certainly starts the brain cells to agitate, and I think they don't know what they're doing, but they certainly do grow. And that's with anything that you can think of. I have a book here before I want to read you one or two brain letters. But this is a wonderful, wonderful book, and I did suggest it. And it's a great thing for young people. It doesn't have to be a wedding gift. It can be a birthday gift. But Love in Every Room is about the heartbeat of the home. And have you seen it?
Bought it.
Did you? It makes a wonderful present. And it is taken from many verses in the Bible, and it shows how to count your blessings, and has many spaces. And the one about, and then it starts with the two shall become one, about the young people here. Children are a heritage from the Lord, and his children are the sheep of his pasture. And of course, everybody knows about train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And then let no one despise your youth. And we have a lot of very negative information about our youth, where we could counteract that through this media with many positive things that young people do. But why do we hear all of the negatives without the counterbalance? And I think I knew something that Lisa did the other day to help a little person. I should write that letter. You know, I think we're all responsible that we don't get that news out there. I think we could make the media respond to us if we tried to even write and say, why can't we have a balance? You know, why must we hear all the negative? Can't you let us have one page or one column where you will print something that's really positive about our youth? Because we have a lot of wonderful young people that can do some fabulous things. For families to live together in harmony. Well, since you have the book and maybe others will see it, I won't show it to you anymore. Sure, I'm sorry.
That's okay, when you're talking about exercising the brain. And why is it that adults have a much more difficult time learning language? What is there about the brain?
It has to do with sound and the acoustical part of the brain that is receiving the sounds that you... It's plasticity when you have a young, very young brain, because children at two and three can easily learn two languages, but the brain node, the way the information is processed in the brain to learn sounds are still viable. They're learning the range of sounds. They're all coming. We have limited by now, or we would not really be able to concentrate on selective sound. This is what we have. And because we grow up in one culture, our selective sounds deal with our language. If you grow up in another culture, it deals with their language. I had two young girls from Denmark come and stay with us after we come back from Europe, and the Danish language is kind of, I don't like to use but it really sounds like it's kind of guttural and sharp, you know. And I had a young friend come over from the Macaw Indian Reservation because I knew his mother, and I asked her to let me have Bill come because I had a little program and I wanted the children to understand his culture. And he spoke Macaw, he sang Macaw, that was so related and relative to the Danish language. And when you think about it, the Macaw natives say that their language came from the whales and the sounds they heard. The Danes live on the North Sea, and we were up there at Skagen, and their language evolved with the same kind principles. But those sounds were very difficult for me to make. And it's the same with French language, is because if you had learned it as a child, you would be able to do that. And it's simply because we have selected, our brain has been conditioned to hear our cultural kind of auditory integration. And so all languages should be learned, you know. I mean, it's not impossible, but it takes a lot of time. But is there anyone who wants to ask more questions? I'm very guilty of not doing this, and I should, if anyone wants to ask about the brain, just no questions?
Just to add to what you said, that as we're learning each language, too, mm-hmm. we learn to assume that anything that doesn't have meaning is noise.
That's right.
And so we sort of filter that all out because it's just too much. You might say there'd be too much sound otherwise.
That's right. Our differentiation, our part of our brain that will do that is very selective. And now they're finding that different parts, I mean, they said that the hippocampus is the one that could do this. Now they're saying that the amygdala does it, and some of these other areas that we never really thought about being able to be are doing this. More and more information about the brain is that more areas are integrated with other areas, so that we have a brain that is fully functional in many directions, which we used to think everything was so selective in the brain, that different parts would only do this or that, which gives a lot of hope to people that have brain injuries. And now they're not, you know, they're not saying that something good couldn't happen with someone that has a brain trauma or a tumor that's removed, because other areas of the brain are on hand to take over the job and allow that to happen. The same way where they used to say that people that had amputations didn't really feel that cut, you know, the where they were amputated. Now they say, yes, the pain is real because the nerve endings have the message that used to go to the foot that's no longer there is trying to retract and go someplace else. And in the meantime, until they find another space, they're going to continue to be allocated to delivering messages to that foot that's no longer there. So there is pain in the head where you start everything anyway.
I'd like to say something about language. I've always heard that you can learn the language best with the children. Mm-hmm. We had a Latvian girl that came to us the day before she was 18. Uh-huh. She learned very quickly from my children.
That's great.
Once or twice I had to correct things, like my kids would call it smashed potatoes, so I had to tell her it was mashed potatoes. And then also I teach English as a second language, and I have a student that was in sixth grade, he knew nothing but Mexican, and so I took Old Dick and Jane.
Good.
And I took it and we read it, I read it twice, and he'd read it twice. Of course, some of the pages only one word. But then, and then I took the second, and then I also put it on tape, deep in the book, deep in the tape, and he learned it that way. Now, a few times I had to demonstrate what a word meant, like run, perhaps. But, and then when I got the third book, he said, let me see that book, and he started out like a whiz. Of course, I had also given him a tape that I had developed about aces, and apple, and so tag and various other words, and beast in the different words. And so he knew, had that as well as this background from the kids, and he just went, he was real excited about that third book.
But you did it in the best way for language and also for actually reading and language development, because it was a multi-sensory way to do it. And anything that a child, because of the two sides of the brain, learns in a multi-sensory experience, they are going to learn it quicker, and it's going to go into the limbic system where it has recall. I mean, a lot of things you can learn superficially, but you don't store them up there for later use. And you want to have learning that will be able to be recalled, especially if it's for children. There is an interesting, I did a series of tapes for college, and from A to Z, I had some other teachers work with me, and two of us went into the grocery store for G, that was grocery store. And so we, in the grocery store, I would do the positive tape. And I went around with a little person. They'd say, could you count me 10 oranges? And this is a four-year-old. And they'd count 10 oranges, you know, say, ooh, what color are they? And then, they'd usually say, because children are very smart, say yellow. And then we'd go over and, do you see a cereal box with a big letter G on it? And, you know, they could find that. Anyway, then my teacher aide would come through with a little person, and it was Mary's daughter, so her daughter knew she was just fooling, and she'd say, now, Annalee, stay right close here and hang on to the, come on, don't you know we're in a hurry because we have to get home to make Dad's dinner? And don't touch those boxes, they have to stay right in line there. And leave that fruit alone, I'll pick it out, I know better. So we went through the alphabet like that, from A to Z. And this was for mothers to show that positive reinforcement can mean so much, and negative is a bummer. Because they shut off. There are ways that a child can just turn it off in the brain. They're not going to learn it. It's your attitude and the way you present it and the way you go about it. And you can go through the alphabet like B for beach was fun, because I would say, oh, look at the sand, isn't the ocean, oh, everything looks so beautiful. And what are you doing there, digging your, look at that little creature crawling over your toe. And then Mary's was, don't get sand on that blanket, now watch out, and don't go near the water unless I'm right there behind. You know, I mean, when I did this in the college class, when the negative was said, everybody laughed. But when I did the positive, they'd all be quiet. It was so funny. You know, I mean, wait a minute here. Well, you know, it's quarter after, and I promised that we would stop. But I really appreciate your wonderful group, because you care. And it's great to talk to all of you about this present God gave us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.